Morning 22, Radio Great Southern, and last year, you might remember, we spoke to a lovely young lady from South Australia, Fiona McCallum. Her first novel, it was called Paycheck, it was about horses, very interesting book and a fascinating character she was. Well, just before Christmas, the next edition of a book arrived called Nowhere Else. And Fiona's joined us on the line from Adelaide. Hello.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Haven't seen that long since we talked to you.
No. But sometimes it feels like forever.
Indeed. Especially when you're Especially when you're a writer. All right. Let's go back to Paycheck. How's it been going?
Fantastic. The response has been quite overwhelming, Pat. It's amazing. It's blown me away. And I've been getting some gorgeous emails from people telling me how much they've enjoyed it, which is just one of the most beautiful things that I think you can receive as a writer.
Indeed. So, well, it was a very down-to-earth novel. I mean, it was an interesting topic, of course we've seen, as we talked about last year, you know, horses that have done well, come from nothing and done well, take over Target as an example, you know, and it was something that people could relate to.
I think we can all relate to a hard luck story and an underdog type story, because being Australian, it's one of the things we love, I think.
Indeed so. Now, of course, your background, I mean, you came from a farm, didn't you? I mean, that's where you originated from.
Absolutely. I'm from broadacre farming, cereal and wool country on the Eyre Peninsula, a small place called Cleve. I was raised on a farm with farming parents, and then I actually went and married a farmer, which didn't work out.
Oh, yes.
But I love farming life, and even though I live, you know, in a city now and I've spent quite a bit of time away from the farm, I'm still a country girl at heart, and, you know, it'll always be in my blood, and that's what I like to write about.
Yeah. Now, of course, your dad died when you were pretty young, at age 19. If he hadn't died, would you have stayed perhaps on the farm and worked a farm with him?
Well, I have a brother, so even though it was the 20th century when I left school, being as I had a brother, even though I did want to run the farm with my dad, it wasn't even worth mentioning, because girls just, even in the 80s, you just didn't do that, especially when you had a brother. So I did, I guess, psychologically speaking, I did the next best thing, which was marry one, and I thought we'd stand shoulder to shoulder and run this farm as a partnership, but got a bit of a shock there. Didn't want a strong, independent woman beside him. I was to shut up and drive my tractor and stop and get meals when appropriate. So it came as a bit of a shock, and he decided he didn't want to be married after all, after a few years, and that was really when I left the district. So I was in the farming district until I was 26.
Yeah.
And then escaped to Adelaide for a while just to sort my head out. And a few months later I met someone else who was moving to Melbourne, and I thought, well, when he asked me to go with him, I thought, well,
why not?
Take a risk. I've never taken a risk in my life. So off I went, and, you know, the journey began, I guess, a whole new chapter of my life.
Indeed. Well, of course, that's when you actually went down and did some full-time study and ended up getting a degree.
I did. And I guess, Pat, the irony is that I was sent to a boarding school, quite a posh boarding school in Adelaide, for the last 2 years of my life. And I really struggled academically, because the school I had come from was just the local area school.
Yep.
And I was terribly homesick as well, and I really didn't fit in at all. And my parents had me assessed by psychologists at the end of year 11 to try and work out what to do with me, whether I should struggle through and go on. And it was all quite interesting. And the psychologist actually said it wasn't worth me doing year 12 because I wouldn't cope with tertiary study afterwards. And 10 years after that, and I did actually struggle on and do year 12, because a friend of the family pointed out that I would get nowhere in life without it. So I'm really glad that I did struggle through. But as a mature age student finding myself in Melbourne, I did have this opportunity to go and study for the first time. And I actually became a high distinction student. And it's just, you know, I love a bit of irony. And it just blows me away that if you take what people say too much to heart, it really has some damaging consequences.
You're right. Yeah.
I was lucky that I had the support of this particular person who, you know, I will be grateful to the end of my days, even though we didn't work out ultimately, but he opened a whole new world to me.
Yeah, he opened the door, which allowed you. And, of course, you did the course in professional writing, and because you'd always wanted to put things to paper, didn't you?
Absolutely. As a 9-year-old, I did, in fact, declare that I wanted to be the next Enid Blyton. I devoured everything that I could of hers, and it the Naughtiest Girl in the School series didn't at all help me when I got to boarding school, I might add, so that was a letdown. But, yeah, so I blame Enid Blyton for my ridiculous imagination. But, yeah, so I had always written something, poetry, short stories, you know, all sorts of things. And then when I was still living on the farm, just purely by chance, I met someone who was a photographer, and he and a mate had started up a newspaper, a statewide newspaper, and they wanted a correspondent from over on the Eyre Peninsula. And so I started writing a couple of articles and got paid for them, and at the same time was studying through TAFE to do a certificate of freelance writing, because I'd always had this interest. And I guess slightly ironic, it was those articles that helped me get into my degree course, because I had to submit a portfolio
right.
sort of thing to get in.
Yep.
So I always had an interest. So that when I had the opportunity to go to uni, I thought, well, okay, I wouldn't have a clue what to study. So I just did what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I didn't give much thought to the fact that, you know, where would it get me? I just wanted to be happy and do something I enjoyed doing.
Well, having got your degree, of course, then comes the difficult thing of thinking, well, I've got to earn some money.
Yes, because the whole world knows an arts degree is not vocational. And it was interesting, my degree, I went in thinking I wanted to do non-fiction. And because I'd written these articles and I really enjoyed that type of feature writing, and I could just see myself swanning around the world writing, you know, this whole romantic notion.
Yes.
And, but I struck, in second year, I struck a bit of a personality clash with the guy who taught non-fiction. And the way our course was structured was such that I would have to spend a whole year with this particular lecturer tutor, and I decided that I loved university so much that I was there to enjoy it, so I didn't want to put myself through that. So I gave up non-fiction and went and did fiction, because the lady who taught fiction was just lovely. And here we are, I'm writing fiction.
Isn't that extraordinary?
But to answer your question, well, back to the earning money, I had a background in administration type work. So I went and tried that for a while. You know, I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wasn't going to be a writer, because at uni I was taught you won't make any money from being a writer, it's ridiculous. And secondly, don't be an editor, because again, there's no money in the publishing industry. So I knew those two things for certain. I was not going to be an editor, and I was not going to be a writer. And then working as a temp personal assistant, one night in the pub, as you do, my partner, who was working in the quite high up in the telecommunications industry, they were doing all the 3G, the tenders for the 3G network.
Yes. Yep.
And this, we're talking, you know, mid-2000.
Yep.
And we're in the pub one night after work drinks, and the account manager said, oh, these documents are dreadful, these tech heads that can't string a sentence together. And these nine people around the table all looked at me and said, well, haven't you done some writing course? Couldn't you come in and help? And I said, well, I suppose so. And I was working in this temp assignment, and they said, oh, well, what do you charge? I thought,
God,
I don't know what I charge. So I tripled what I was earning. I didn't have a clue. I was a consultant, so obviously I would earn more than what I was earning as a PA. And then he said, oh, well, is that Excluding GST, because GST had just come in. Oh, yes, excluding GST, add a bit more. And so then they took me in, gave me a shot over a weekend, because I was working this other job, and they loved what I did. And well, that night after the pub, they said, well, all you need's an ABN, see, to work for us. So I went home that night, registered a business name, and my little business, Content Solutions, was born.
Good heavens.
And it did really quite well. And it was just that, and that is the way, Pat, things happen to me.
Yeah.
Just serendipity.
Yeah.
You know,
doors open up. Yeah.
It just sort of figures itself out. If I stop worrying about controlling stuff and worrying about what's going to happen, because I was raised, you know, on a farm with people that did worry, and I think that's the nature of farming generally. It's taken me a lot to actually stop and clear the mind and accept that things do happen and they figure themselves out okay in the end.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after all of that, you started your writing, and then you came back to Adelaide on your own this time.
Yeah, so my partner got a big transfer to Sydney, so I went kicking and screaming because my business had started in Melbourne. I had great uni friends there and life was really great, and so I very reluctantly went, and basically it just went downhill from the day I got there, and I found myself quite lonely working from home. And then a telco slump hit and they weren't paying consultants to do things for them when they were laying people off. And I actually, quite by chance, stumbled across a brochure for a writing course the other side of Sydney from where I was living. And I thought, oh, that might be a way to actually meet some people and, you know, get out of the house. So I went and did a writing course and basically rediscovered my creativity and my passion in writing and decided, and it was a bit of a strange, another serendipitous type thing that happened where the people that I met were doing a, I guess you call it a bit of a new age self-development type course one weekend, and I thought, life just doesn't feel like it's right. There's something missing here. It's not quite working for me. So I thought, oh, why not? And it was the sort of thing that Farm Girl Fiona would never have contemplated. It was hypnosis, timeline therapy, neuro-linguistic programming, quite odd to the sort of person I was. But I went along and I discovered in an absolute, I kid you not, light bulb moment, my destiny, my whole being, place and reason for being on the earth was to be a novelist. And I decided in this absolute moment I was going to be a novelist and no one was going to stand in my way.
Wow.
Well, it took 9 years to finally get published, but
hey,
dreams do come true.
Oh, yes. You've got to reach for the stars sometimes, haven't you? You've got to have dreams. You've got to have hopes and aspirations and think, as long as I keep going, I will get there. And you've got to have belief in yourself, because that's number one.
I think so. And also, I look back and, you know, I had so many rejections and
they
rip you apart. And I got so close to just, right, I'm just going to write and stuff is trying to get published. It's just too heartbreaking. And I look back now through all that I went through and think, no, that is the journey I had to go through, because it wouldn't be as good now if on my first manuscript, the first place I sent it to, they published me. It just...
No, doesn't work like that.
It wouldn't have the same ring to it. And, you know, it has been tough, but I wouldn't change my life for the world.
Yeah, worse than like that old cliche, isn't it? No pain, no gain,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, Paycheck was a lovely novel, and, you know, it's obviously attracted and it's done very well, I must say. But this one, Nowhere Else... Well, it's something else, I have to tell you.
thank you.
I read it just before Christmas. Christmas Eve is, in fact, when I first read it. I read it again. I've read it twice.
Wow.
And it's interesting, the second time around, you do get some interesting things. And it's the originality of it is based on fact. And that's where the fact stops, isn't it, really? Because there's this plane crash that happened, in which you lost two friends back in 2000 in one of those commuter airline crashes in South Australia.
I did. Two friends of mine, who I hadn't actually seen for a couple of years, yet they were lost in it. And so Nowhere Else started, really, the seed of it was to write a small tribute about them, and it just grew from there. And I think the other seed that started Nowhere Else was the absolute shock I had of learning of the plane crash, because when it happened, I was living in Melbourne, and I had travelled on those same planes for many, many years. And I was very, very shocked to learn that there were no life jackets on board those planes, when all of the years that I had been flying, I absolutely thought with certainty that there were. And to this day, I really would swear that I thought that on the safety card in the front pocket were instructions on how to use those life jackets. And it just came as a huge shock to me of losing these people that I knew, and also, you know, that my connection to having flown so many times. It just jolts. It really jolts.
There's a shiver up your spine, doesn't it?
Yes, and I remember the first time, because the airline flew for I'm not sure how long afterwards while the investigation was taking place, and the airline has since ceased to exist, and with it actually the whole air service to Cleve. So you can't fly to Cleve anymore. You have to fly to Port Lincoln or Whyalla and then
drive
about an hour and a half. So that really rocked the community as well. But I actually had to fly home for a funeral, or I think a couple of funerals and a wedding after, on these small planes. And I remember the first time I was a nervous wreck, a bit like poor Nicola.
Yes, your heroine.
In the book. And I remember just reading this safety card, you know, four times and just looking like a freak, being very stressed. And there's a poor pilot, and they were, you know, they're in their early 20s. They were these
they're only kids,
young lads, and they were so nice. And but I survived, and I still like flying on small planes.
Surprise, yeah.
Sorry, I've got off track.
No. That's all right. It's fine. But you've made your heroine, Nicola Harvey, a television journalist who actually does an investigation of this here a plane crash and wins a Walkley Award for excellence in television. But you've not been a television journalist per se. Did you draw on other people and other experiences?
Not for the actual character. I've watched plenty of television.
Oh, wow, there's plenty of them around, yeah.
I love television. So that's the extent of my knowledge of television journalism. But she was chosen, and her career was chosen, because I needed a character who had to be a city chick through and through, quite a snob, and somehow get her, for some reason, out to the sticks. And it as I said, it started as a seed of the plane, so she had to go by plane on the same route. And it just evolves from there, Pat. I don't know where I get my ideas from. They seem to just... It's almost like a meditative state or a trance or something. They just float to the surface, and if they stay there long enough, they're a keeper.
Indeed.
So, no, I haven't... can't profess to any experience with television journalism.
Well, where did the name Nowhere Else come from? Because that's the name you've given to this little town in the middle of the Eyre Peninsula. Where did that come from?
Well, there is a place called Nowhere Else.
Well, there's two
in
places
Tasmania.
Called... Yes, there's one in Tasmania. I've got a little photograph. My dad took one back in the late 50s of a little sign outside the back of Devonport which says, to Nowhere Else, a little farming community.
Well, there's also a similar sign on over near Elliston on the Eyre Peninsula, and I didn't actually know of the place called Nowhere Else near Elliston, but I needed an obscure sounding name for a place to send this city chick so that she would just get her mind blown about how bad it was.
Yeah.
And I actually, there used to be a really good website with place names, and I haven't been able to find it recently, where you could do searches and just find obscure place names. And for some reason, I just decided she had to go to Nowhere Else. Mm. Because it was like nothing else.
And, absolutely.
I just like the sound of it for someone, you know, to give Nicola a right shock.
Well, you chose, a little one-horse town, and we don't mean that disparagingly, but, I mean, there are plenty of them around, and I've been to them all over Australia. One pub and a few motel units, and that's it. No restaurants, no nothing, no day spas, no frills, just the front bar of the pub.
Yep, that's right.
Boy, and the local gossip, the lady you've described as Beryl in here, who, you know, I mean, there's one of them in every little one horse town who knows everybody and everything else and everybody else's business or what have you.
Yeah.
And look, you know, it's interesting. I've always discovered that people who live in country towns are much less hypocritical than their city counterparts, I have to say. They're much more down-to-earth sort of people. You know, they're real people.
Yeah, I think, a spade's a spade. And,
yeah.
And it can be seen as a blessing and both a curse.
Indeed.
Depends where you are and who you're speaking to.
Well, you've got so many plots and subplots in this book, you know, and I don't want to give away a lot of the plots because I think people need to read this book, and particularly with the interesting twist at the end. But it's fascinating to take a bird from the city, as you say, one who is a snob, and stick her in the middle of flipping nowhere and say, well, there you are. You know, cope.
Yes.
And cope.
She didn't quite.
No. No.
Cope. But, you know, she had to put that aside when she discovered her connection to this place. And I'll try not to give too much.
No, no. Well, she was sent there to do a job on a story on the drought. After winning a Walkley Award, her editor says, OK, we're going to send you out to the bush and, you know, we want a story about the drought. And, of course, one knows about droughts and farmers and all sorts of problems. And, yes, she encounters some interesting things. A bit of sex in there too, I notice.
It's slightly more spicy than...
Yeah, well, I would have said it was just... But, I mean, it's all done very nicely and tastefully, you know. I mean, it's not over the top.
I hope so.
Yeah. But in Nicola, it's very interesting, though, you know, and her relationship with her stockbroker, fiancé, and what have you.
Mm.
I read a little bit of you into that story to a certain extent. I mean, not, you know, open and full frontal, but it's, you know, there's a bit of you in there somewhere, isn't there?
There is. I write about what I know, and while I haven't worked in television, I have had that transition of the journey that Nicola goes through, which is to realise that it's not her life that she seems or thinks is quite perfect, is actually not at all perfect at all. She's basing all of that on material and dollars, and that's what happened to me. That's my journey.
Yeah.
This partner of mine, what attracted him to me in the beginning, you know, his ambition, his determined drive to succeed in the corporate world was ultimately what repelled me.
Mm.
Because I realised that it had tipped the scales to being money is everything. And when I was complaining that my partner was away a lot and I was never seeing him because he was travelling around the world in his executive sales role, he said to me on the phone one night from one of his overseas destinations, "Oh, just take the credit card for a spin." And it struck me as another light bulb type thing that this person after 8 years doesn't know me at all.
Oh.
And I started thinking it was time to leave, and it just wasn't how I would want to raise children, and the values were just not mine, and it just put me on a path of really looking at myself and what I had become. And that's what Nicola has to experience. And so, yes, I'm not Nicola, and Nicola's not me, but our journeys
are similar.
Quite similar.
You both had a reawakening.
That's right. And I'm not adopted. She was adopted.
Yes.
So she has to deal with her sense of identity as well, which, whether we're adopted or not, I think there are periods in our lives where we do consider our identities and go through that kind of reawakening and discovery and angst about who we are and what we're doing.
Mm. It is a fascinating book. It really is. And there's so many little intrigues and subplots and what have you. And we're not going to give it away. People have got to read this book. I love the little piece on the front in gold, which says, "Publisher's guarantee, 100% satisfaction or your money back."
I think that's great.
I think that's delightful.
You can't lose. It's win-win.
Yeah, it's win-win. You know, it's it's a win-win situation.
Fantastic.
I know, and I know it's going to do well. Well, of course, now, of course, you are, and I suppose, you know, the royalty checks from the first book have helped to keep the wolf from the door, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah. And here you are, still at it, you know, tail up, head down, and... we've got something else on the boil as well.
We've always got something on the boil, Pat, because I have got way too much to say. And I love writing so much that I've got to say it and I've got to put it in writing. And so there's always something on the boil. We've just finalised a book called Wattle Creek.
Yes.
That's coming out in April. 1st of April, which I hate saying that, being April Fools and all, but hopefully it's a good omen because paycheck was April as well.
Indeed.
And then I'm working on a new manuscript as well, and I've got tons of ideas in the pipeline, and of course I've been having beautiful readers writing to me asking for sequels and...
Yes.
Because they just love
Well, you've left the door open. I told you that last time when you did Paycheck, you left the door open. You've certainly left the door open with nowhere else as well.
I think so. And I can just... I tend to... If I rush into something, I have to really give an idea a lot of thought and give it time to percolate in the head and all the rest of it. Because so many ideas just won't work. And if you're going to spend... you know, months and months on this, you've got to love what you're doing and you've got to do it for the right reasons. Well, that's what I found. Otherwise, it just doesn't work for me. And so there are lots of ideas floating around that are waiting to see if they're going to be goers or not.
Yeah, of course, writing is a pretty solitary occupation and, you know, do you find time to do other things?
I'm pretty obsessed at the moment, to be honest, Pat. So I've been frantically writing. Don't get out much. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? But that's by choice. I mean,
yeah.
I love a solitary life, and writing is my life. It is... I think it's like a vocation. It's like becoming a monk or something, where that is your whole focus, and... nothing else really matters, and people would probably look at my life and, you know, would pity or think, oh, that's a bit sad, but I'm blissfully happy.
Yep.
And at the moment I feel that I've got to put everything into this to get a good start and a good foothold, and then I'm hoping that things will settle down a bit, because 2011, with having two books come out and then another one in April, it made it a pretty big, busy year.
Yes.
Because there are also a lot of things that, in addition to writing and actually getting the words down, there's a lot of things that I now have to do that come with being published.
Yeah, public appearances, radio interviews, and all that stuff, which takes time. Yeah,
which is great fun.
Yeah.
It's just that it's a little bit distracting. And
it's intrusive into your work.
I struggle a bit with refocusing. When I was working with my business, I would do a project and then it would take me a couple of weeks to get my head back into creative writing mode. And so there'd be that lag time, and I find that I still have that a bit with, you know, talking about one book and then, right, okay, now different set of characters, you know, different plot, okay. And there's a bit of lag time there of, you know, getting back into it. But I don't see something like writer's block as a negative like a lot of people do.
Mm.
I look at it as well, okay, that's the universe telling you that it needs more thought put into it, or that, and also that creativity can't be forced. And if you do force it and you do actually write, chances are what you've written will be crap, excuse the language, and be edited out anyway. So you may as well
do it right.
Just calm down and just let it come when it's ready. And to me, I'm finding that that's the best writing that comes out eventually. So you try to keep yourself, you know, calm about it, because writing for me is almost like meditation as well, and you've got to have a nice, clear mind in order to do it.
Well, I was left with a great deal of warmth coming out of this book, I have to tell you. It's a most enjoyable book, and I love the plots, I love the subplots, I love the characters, and I think people are just going to love Nowhere Else.
Thanks so much, Paris.
You're more than welcome.
This is lovely.
And I'm really looking forward to Wattle Creek, so we will be talking to you again in a few months' time.
I look forward to it.
And that is excellent. Well, thank you so much indeed for your time. Really enjoyed it, Fiona. And, you know, keep up the good work. And bum up, head down, girl.
Well, thank you so much,
You're
Pat,
more than welcome.
And thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate
welcome.
It. And thanks so much to the readers out there who are buying my books, because without you people, I would be nothing.
Indeed.
So,
Thank you. You're welcome. Fiona McCallum, the author of this wonderful new book called Nowhere Else. It's produced by Harlequin Books, and you will find it at every good bookstore.